Hey everyone, John here. Just a quick word of warning. We will be spoiling this film in its entirety. So if you have not seen this film and you don't want it spoiled for you, just hit pause real quick and go and watch the movie and then come back and enjoy the show.
Okay, I miss you too.
Sick. That's awesome. Cool.
Cool.
Great. Awesome.
Well, I wouldn't know because you literally never text me.
That is simply not true. I text you all the time.
I didn't even know you were coming to that.
Well, you don't text me either, so
I replied to your fucking story and you didn't. You just like saw
it. You do not reply to a reply, okay?
Well, you should.
That's psychotic behavior, but that makes sense for you.
Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Surviving Chick Flicks. I'm John.
I'm Sammy.
And I'm Joseph.
And this week, Pride Month continues. And this week, we are focusing on the bisexuals. And we have found a hilarious, 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 not awkward at all comedy to talk about. This week, we are talking about the 2020 film Shiva Baby. Or as we all like to call it eventual therapy. My mic fell out. All right. So I guess we'll just play the trailer real quick and then we'll let the healing begin.
I think it's really great to like support females, particularly female entrepreneurs.
Cool.
In the future.
Great. Yeah. Awesome.
Danielle! Danielle!
Please, Sonia!
Morrissey and her daughter Stephanie.
Jessica.
Whatever. You should really talk to her, you know?
No.
It's just a job.
Darling!
Hi, Mom. I'm
so sorry for your loss.
No funny business with Maya.
Thank you.
You think everyone that's bi is experimenting? You have zero gaydar.
Excuse me, kid. I lived through New York in the 80s. My gaydar is strong as a bull.
You can't just, like, show up to, like, the after party for a Shiva and, like, reap the benefits of the buffet.
She lost so much weight.
Yeah.
You think she has an eating disorder?
What is your major again?
Sweetheart, feminism isn't exactly what I call a career.
It's not my career. It's a lens.
Max worked for your father years ago.
Really?
Just try to behave yourself today.
I'm not gonna blow him in the bathroom.
Why do you keep looking over there?
Hi, I'm Kim Beckett.
I don't think she's pretty. Malibu Barbie is not pretty. I mean, she's just like basic.
You are such a good kid.
Are you on drugs?
No, just kidding.
Is she okay?
I already have a plan and a path, so.
So you just study and don't eat and go out with your beautiful friends, is that it? Is that your life?
Yeah. Yes, that's my life.
Wow, lucky you.
Mom, who died?
All right, Shiva Baby, starring Rachel Sennett, Molly Gordon, Danny DeFari, Polly Draper, Fred Melamed, Diana Agron, and directed by Emma Seligman. Even though I know the answer to this question, just for consistency. Joseph, Sammy, when was the first time you watched this movie?
For me, it was a couple days ago.
Joseph can go first.
Yeah, it was a couple days ago. I had no idea this movie existed.
Admit it, you thought I made this movie up whenever I put it on the schedule.
No, I didn't think you made it up. I was just like, I never heard of this one. Yeah. And how recent is it? How old is this? You're like, it came out like a couple of years ago. I was like, oh.
Okay. Yeah, it started making the festival circuit in 2020, and think last year was its official release, so.
Gotcha.
Would have had a sooner release, but this flu went around. Sammy, how many hours ago did you finish this movie?
Hey, y'all, I swear I have a different answer this time. I do. Okay, hold on a second.
You about did watch the movie, right?
20 hours ago.
All right.
Give or take half an hour.
Yeah. We won't hold you to it. Well, naturally, I did not see this movie in theaters because, you know, they wouldn't have let me in the Toronto International Film Festival one day.
What's wrong with
them? But I watched this movie. I think it's more of a me issue than them. Because it's not a free festival, apparently. It's also not online. Sundance spoiled me that one year that they went online. We'll talk about whether or not it made my year-end list, the best of list. But we have a essentially a feature debut. This is Emma Seligman's first feature film. It is an expansion of her second short film of the same name that she turned into a feature, and that was always her plan. Essentially, she took the advice that all writers get of write what you know, and she's like, well, I'm Jewish, so I'll write something about that. And also, Emma is bisexual, so as she expanded on the short, she was able to put that angle into the feature. I know the short film is out there, and Rachel Sennett is also the lead in that in the short, as well as this one. But it was basically like the first 7 minutes of the movie, but like the character of Maya did not exist in that. It was just simply her dealing with the fact that where the film gets its title is Danielle has a sugar baby and she has a sugar daddy, and they run into each other at a Shiva, and for 77 awkward minutes, Danielle has to deal with that.
Yeah, I think awkward is an understatement.
Yeah. I think we were talking in the pre-show that, you know, we couldn't believe it was less than half an hour, but I put forward that if this film was any longer, I don't think our hearts could have taken it.
Well, see, it's a little bit different. Actually, I didn't really have an anxiety attack myself per se, or it was intense, but I loved how it was shot like a horror film. Mm-hmm. It was just like, I could see why they did this, because it's one of those, every moment is just terrifying for her.
Yeah. Well, add to this, like, Emma Seligman doesn't hate horror films, but she's not like a horror, she never set out to make, like, quote unquote, horror films, like, you know, someone running with a chainsaw to kill the teenagers having sex in the campgrounds. You know, that was not her. That was never her goal, but
yeah,
this film did spark a lot of film Twitter discourse of, is Shiva Baby a comedy or a horror film?
I don't think it's a comedy at all.
Well,
it kind of is. It's got its funny moments, but I think it's kind of like a dramedy. But I'm struggling to think of it. I'm curious if y'all can think of an example of a film that is better captured, trying to think of the way to put this, not captured, but been able to make their audience feel what the person in the film is feeling. Like, the way it was shot, the use of the music, like, it created an environment that you could actually physically feel while you were sitting there. And if you've ever had social anxiety, which I know was not exactly what she was having, but if you've ever had that, that was like a visual interpretation of what that feels like.
I know examples of what you're, you know, talking about. I just couldn't name you one off the top of my head. But, I mean, I'm sure there are quite a few films that Joseph and I were sit down with that 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die list. I'm sure we can find 5 or 6 examples of something.
Oh, that. Yeah. I'm with you. I just can't think of any off the top of my head. I know there is. I'm just
yeah.
Not what I'm thinking about. point.
I kind of felt like the descent did.
And you kind of imagined yourself in their shoes while watching mm-hmm. it, whether you realize it or not.
Yeah. And Joseph, have you seen the Elijah Wood version of Maniac?
I haven't, but I've always wanted to watch it.
I'm kind of on the fence on whether or not I want to say that's an example, because that is a film where you are seeing everything through Elijah Wood's character's eyes, which you in the original you did follow that main character who is the killer, but you don't see it through his eyes. You just see him. But I guess if that's an example, we have to acknowledge Hardcore Henry existed.
I don't know. Have y'all seen The Voices with Ryan Reynolds?
The Ryan Reynolds movie?
They kind of put you in his perspective because...
I haven't.
Because he is that a...
I was going to say, that might be an interesting one for her.
It might be, because he is a serial... He's somebody that's... He's a serial killer, but he gets on these meds to make him function properly. And whenever he's off his meds, you see the world in his eyes. He doesn't realize he's crazy. Everything is like, it's just in a different way. And they get you to feel like he is. And when he realizes what he's doing, he is terrified by what he did. And like I said, it's a really well done movie. And it's a weird, sometimes it's comedic, darkly comedic. And other times you're just like, what am I witnessing? That came to my head just
And of course, you know, Tammy and the T-Rex, you know, you learn to love a T-Rex.
You know, I was with her on that whenever the whole time she fell in love with the T-Rex. I was 100% on board. I was waiting to see what said anything.
She's just giving us the look.
I can feel it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So if you've never seen Shiva Baby,
you have to put it on camera for you to understand what was going on. You could just feel it through the phone.
We've both been in relationships before, so we know.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So if you've never seen Shiva Baby, I'm gonna run through a very, very brief plot synopsis, but I would kind of encourage you, stop, go actually watch the movie, because I'm not gonna go through every plot detail. But I think this is one that you need to see before we just start ruining it for you. So go now and then come back. All right. So the story of Shiva Baby is about, we follow Danielle, played by Rachel Sennett. She's a senior in college, just about to graduate. But the way she makes her money is as a sugar baby. She tells her family that she's a babysitter, but really she's, you know, got a sugar daddy taking care of her. After leaving a session with said sugar daddy, Max, she meets up with her parents, Joel and Debbie, to go attend a Shiva in their neighborhood. Debbie, her mom, coaches Danielle on what to say when asked about her upcoming post-college life. While at the Shiva, however, Danielle is bombarded with question after question about her prospects, which are frequently mixed up with the prospects of her ex-girlfriend, Maya, who is also in attendance. Things get even more complicated when Max, her sugar daddy, shows up to her surprise, and an even bigger shock follows. Max, Shiksa wife, Rose, and their baby also attends. Danielle tries to deal with all of this through the absolutely most chaotic day, ending with Rose possibly finding out about Max's relationship with Danielle, Danielle and Max ending their relationship, and Maya and Danielle possibly rekindling theirs, as her dad drives everyone home, including Max and Rose, in his overpacked van. So,
okay, that was the funniest, most awkward scene I've ever seen.
It's just like,
it was kind of a perfect ending, which I'm going to compare to another film later, and it's going to sound weird because it was an ending that pissed me off about another film, but actually I think worked really well for this one.
Okay, well, I kind of love that whole end where she kind of gets that release of making up with Danielle as they're walking that one lady to her car who isn't supposed to be driving because she doesn't have a driver's license.
But they just let her do it anyways.
Mm-hmm. At that point in the day, do y'all know what a shiva is?
Not really.
Okay.
I have a general sense. I know that when a person of the Jewish faith passes away, it's common to sit shiva. I want to say they do it for a number of days.
Yeah, a specific number, 7, because shiva in Hebrew is 7. At least that's what the internet told me. So, Joseph, you actually like a movie that is completely about sitting shiva called This Is Where I Leave You.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen
that. That was a good movie.
It is a great movie.
And I think we're the only three people that like that movie.
And I don't know why, because that movie's so good. That's a movie that's severely underrated.
Yeah.
But I know there was a similar thing with that, except it's not... It's more about a family dynamic more than anything.
Mm. Yeah. That is kind of funny it's easy to miss if you're not paying attention, because they kind of make Danielle out to be kind of irresponsible. So at one point she asks who died, but
no, I thought they did. I thought it was somebody they're related to, second cousin's wife or something.
Yeah, but they didn't come right out and say, like, you know, it is so-and-so's shiva, because the person who died is not the important part of this movie.
Right.
But I love the drop line of, by the way, who died? The thing about it is typically in Jewish neighborhoods, it doesn't matter who died. If it was someone from your neighborhood, you knew, or someone in your family knew that person, so you went and attended the shiva. And the shiva does include like a table of food that everyone who visits comes to eat and be with the bereaved. I also, and just in case we do have any Jewish listeners, I skimmed a Wikipedia article, so I tried. if I got anything wrong, I am sorry. I didn't even do my best, but I did the best that I did.
That's something, John.
Yeah. There was an expert. That's all we can really ask.
Yeah, there is this part of my brain that thought we should get someone that's Jewish on this movie, on this episode. And then I was like, well, let's see, one I know is in Israel, and the others involves a massive amount of coordinating.
So okay, let me ask y'all a question real quick. It's a little bit changing the subject, but I can't remember what the time this movie came out, but when it came out, was Sugar Babies, like the website, was that a thing?
I know there are Sugar Baby sites. I don't know if there is like the J-Date equivalent of a Sugar Baby site.
I'm not really sure. That's beyond my expertise.
You're going to have to clarify that. What is J-Date? I don't know what it is.
It is... It's like Christian Mingle or BlackPeopleMeet.com, or I guess Farmers Only. It is a dating website designed for Jewish singles, but I'll just admit I was allowed to join. So
gotcha. Well, no. So I was just kind of curious if that was if that was a thing at the time.
J-Date's been around for a while, and
you would kind of think that they would. You know, I don't know, make an attempt to vet people, but I don't know. I kind of felt like it was seriously overlooked. Well, I know it's the point of the film. It wasn't overlooked by her, that he was angry at her this whole time for all the lies she told him when he was married.
And never said a word.
Yeah, and that's one of the great hypocrisies in this movie, is that while she, she may be lying that she's using his money to pay for law school, and she's lying to everyone that she's not a hooker. Because I don't know how the sugar baby thing works, because I was too old and not attractive enough to be a sugar baby to a rich older cougar. But that's but that's not besides the point. But it is also great. It helps with the tension of the movie.
It does. But that's also been, that's a thing that's very hypocritical in today's society anyways. a lot of times, not always, a lot of times females get kind of looked down upon for some of the things they do, but the guy's like, well, that's guys. They're expected to do that kind of stuff. I'm like, but they shouldn't.
Boys will be boys.
Yeah, and that's bullshit.
And he was married to the cheerleader from Glee to make it even worse.
Yeah. Okay, so funny thing. Diana Agron's character is referred to as a shiksa in this movie, and our lead character is Jewish. When in reality, our lead actress is not Jewish, and Diana Agron is.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I did not know that.
Yeah. I believe Rachel Sennett's family is like, I wonder if her descendants came from Italy. I didn't print out her Wikipedia article for the show, so. But she did the character very well.
You know what's kind of funny about that is she actually, feature-wise, she looked more like she would have been of, like, you know, there's obviously a difference between being Jewish by religion and by
conversion.
Yeah. And but like also being of Jewish descent. Mm-hmm. And she looks the part more than
Diana Agron does.
Yeah.
I love that this film does not have stars in it. Like, we know the girl from Glee. I know Fred Melamed from a movie that Joseph once a year got me a Blu-ray for Christmas, the Coen brothers, A Serious Man, where he's not the main character of that movie, but he plays the man who's the main character's wife leaves him for. Basically, this movie, whenever they were casting, they were really kind of exploring like the local New York theater community, and because everyone lived within so many miles of the set that everyone used public transportation to get to set. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. Which, you know, for a low budget film is great because it's, you know, filming in New York is ridiculously expensive. Like, that's why so many movies set in New York are shot in Toronto, because it's cheaper and you get the tax break. But I love the parents in this movie so much. The confused dad,
they are your typical parents that bicker at each other.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, love they love each other, they just like to bicker.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know they're not in danger of splitting up. You just know that's just who they are.
Yeah. It's just they both just like, just be quiet. I know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. No, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah. The dad clearly doesn't know.
Another little bit of insight. I don't know if this is like an insight into the writer. The mother-daughter relationship was so well written.
Yeah.
Like, the overbearing mother that had these like semi-unreasonable expectations, but not really for her daughter, mm-hmm. and was a little too involved. But at the end of the day, she was a really good mom.
Yeah.
And you never questioned if she didn't, that she loved her. You know she loves her.
Right.
Sometimes she has not a great way of showing it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, you know, as the daughter of a mother, that was like a very, very realistic interpretation mm-hmm. of all the misunderstandings because of assumptions made by both people.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, this is a very much a write what you know film, and that's kind of the angle Emma took from this. The only thing is Emma's not from New York. She's a filthy Canadian.
Oh, by the way, I don't think I've ever seen a main character in a movie. If I have, it's been a long time, that had hairy armpits.
I didn't even notice.
I did. That was just like, wait a minute. She has hair. I was like, that's not.
I think I've evolved to the point where I am now just not even noticing that anymore. It's just like, oh, yeah, she does.
Cool. It didn't bother me. It was just one of those just like stuck out. It's like, I'm not used to seeing that, especially in a movie that's, you know, has your lead female character. Usually that's just the other way around.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't even notice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess it says more about me then. I go, I don't
know. Yeah. Joseph has an armpit fetish.
I do. And I've just put out another fetish, is letting everybody else know what my fetish is.
But I think this was this was really interesting because it was very I don't know, it was kind of very postmodernistic in a way that you have to be really skilled to make a film like this work. Because if you're not careful about how you do it, it can be incredibly boring.
Yeah.
And
Well, there's one element to this movie that we haven't really talked about, and I feel like we're going to talk about it more later, but there is a very good balance of elements, because you have theater actors in this movie, and plus Seligman and Sinnott have a good working relationship, because they've done three, soon to be four films together, or maybe two films together, and then a third one on the way. Anyway, but Seligman's next film is going to have Sinnott in it. But you get that mix of people that are actors and not movie stars, plus a director that seemed to know what she wanted and was able to get the right people together to deliver that. Plus, this feels like something that she herself probably went through. Probably not, you know, everything. I'm sure having to explain film school to a bunch of relatives that don't think that's a thing.
That was a pretty, like, I don't know, it was a pretty realistic human experience. But I think that's what was so smart about it. Like, it was one of those films like God of Carnage or, you know, the original idea, I think, was Seinfeld, except that leaned more towards comedy. This movie, actually, this is not the film I was going to compare it to, but it does remind me a lot of God of Carnage. Not in necessarily the feel of the film, but in what it sort of accomplished, which was, it's a film about nothing but an actual real-life experience. Like, you're watching something that anybody could go through.
You know, I've watched
China. It is. For a show that's, like, literally four people sitting in a room arguing. It's brilliant.
There's another film that came out last year that only had a cast of four people, and it was it's called Mass. I haven't seen anything about everything about it. It was just like, you know, just an actor's movie, like powerhouse performances from everyone, and not an easy watch either. But everything about it screamed, this should be a stage play if it's not. This movie kind of also reminded me a little bit of Robert Altman movies, which I know that doesn't mean a lot, maybe, but that overlapping dialogue, which I know he's not the first to do that, but that's kind of one of the things he's known for.
Yeah, because I think that really the overlapping dialogue kind of gave it that feel it needs.
Yeah.
Especially the scenes where you could definitely tell she is losing it and about to just have a pretty much a meltdown.
Yeah. God, and when she does have the meltdown,
It's really sad and heartbreaking.
Yeah. One of the touches, like whenever she knocks over everything and is trying to clean up the vase, and she picks up those prayer books and kissing them, that's something that people that are Jewish would instinctively know to do. So.
What was y'all's feelings on the Maya character? How did y'all like her?
I liked her. I mean, you can tell there's definitely that whatever reason they split and stopped talking really kind of stung her, so she's not willing to just forgive and forget immediately.
I don't think either one of them are, really.
No.
Because it seems like it was both of them that just something just went wrong and they just kind of stopped really clicking.
Mm-hmm. Well, and part of it may have to do with their focus on school, because I know they were both graduating. Maya's on her way to law school. Meanwhile, Danielle really doesn't know what she wants to do.
Yeah, and that was something, like I said, I like Maya, but there are times he kind of is really shitty to her for no reason.
Well, I would almost say that Danielle's kind of equally shitty to her.
Well, yeah, and that's true. Mm-hmm. They both had moments that were just kind of uncalled for. It was like, especially, it was like kind of making fun of what her degree is, especially whenever she finds her phone and just
yeah,
I bet a lot of it was because she was hurt, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, that's really judgmental and shitty of you to do.
Yeah. Oh, you do tend to lash out at people whenever they hurt you. Kind of like, you know, I still have yet to forgive Sammy for not liking Sleepaway Camp.
That's true, and I'm still...
He'll get over it eventually.
I'm still yet to forgive you for Pink Flamingos, but, you know, that's here or there.
Neither has forgiven you for Mortal Kombat.
And I completely accept that. I knew what I was getting into when I suggested that movie.
Sadly, I did too, but I still put all the blame on you.
Oh, no, I expect nothing less. Yeah.
But I do like Maya and Danielle's reconciliations, like both of them. The one where they finally have the conversation that they needed to have, and then whenever they finally realize, yeah, let's try this again.
Yeah, and I thought that was a really sweet moment, especially at the end.
So what do we think of Rose, the Shiksa?
She's not really in it enough for you to really have much of an impression on her, but I think a lot of, like, everything you hear about her before you really even meet her or get to know her as a character, it's all through their perception and not who she really is.
Because
she everything that's happened to her, it's not within her control. Like, her husband's a shitty husband.
Yeah, but not everyone... Well, they have opinions on him about, you know, how she's more financially successful than him, but also making fun on how she doesn't know how to pronounce arugula. She thinks it's arugula, which is different.
Yeah.
Like, actually, I had to Google what arugula was, and I want arugula right now. It's like, give me all of it.
Well, and that's also because she's not in this movie. She's not Jewish.
Yeah.
So she wouldn't.
And trying to not sound anti-Semitic, but there are Jewish people that don't, you know, like the merge of the Gentiles, and then there's some that, and then there's a lot that don't give a shit.
Like any other religion.
God, could you imagine a Baptist and a Methodist marrying? Oh my God. I'm only describing my grandparents. And one thing I don't think is abundantly clear, I don't think it's explicitly clear. I think it's hinted at. But do you think Rose knows Max slept with Danielle?
Yes. I think she suspected it, and it's. I think she got it confirmed later on.
I think partially with them having the matching bracelet, and then Danielle's supposed to be this babysitter and has this absolute aversion to touching a child.
Oh, no, that.
Or, like, I mean, I should say holding a child.
I think basically everybody knew. I mean, I think her mom knew, except for her dad, who's oblivious to everything. I think her mom knew. I think, I think her ex-girlfriend knew. I think.
Well, her ex-girlfriend very much knew.
Right. I think his wife knew. The only thing I thought was weird was the aversion to holding the baby thing. I actually thought what they were doing is, I thought they were hinting at the fact that she was pregnant.
I never got that.
No.
No, I always figured that she was trying to prove to herself, like, yeah, she's full of shit and she's been fucking my husband.
Oh, well, I mean, that's definitely what she was trying to get out of it. I just thought that her aversion to actually holding the baby was about something else.
I took that as, I'm 22 years old and I don't want to touch a child. Like, keep that thing over there.
But at the same time, it's one of those, like, she just found out that he was married. She didn't know that.
Which, you know, having never been a sugar baby or having one, because life is just that unfair. I don't know how many married sugar daddies are up front that they're married. I'm sure some are and then some aren't. I would almost go most aren't. Which begs the question, was he having sex with her in, like, the apartment that, like, his wife lives in?
I don't really know. And I'm kind of thinking that was the case.
No, I don't think so. Because didn't she establish they bought a home out there? So I think the apartment used to be his apartment.
It still is.
For a while, but
it's his bachelor pad.
I think that his wife, did y'all get the impression? I think she knew he was cheating on her. Like, not specifically with her, but I just think that she knew he was cheating on her in general. Like, this is not the first time.
Oh, definitely not the first time. Probably did, because the way she looked at it before she even knew what was going on, his phone was off, and she was kind of looking at him like something, like something's up. I know something's up. He's like, she's not the women. Usually, your partner's not that stupid. Usually,
this movie's only 77 minutes. I want to know, should we move into categories now?
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Yeah, I'm good with it too.
Because really, I mean, there is a lot to talk about in this movie, but you know, do we want to touch on every individual moment? And I think a lot of that's going to come out in categories. So
I think you're right. Because
right, there's no need for this episode to be longer than the movie.
It's going to be, but that's just who we are.
We ran.
It's not like we're reviewing Endgame that's like 3 hours long. So
that would be our shortest episode, actually, if we want to be fair.
Guys, y'all's Batman review was only 45 minutes long. What happened? Well, we talked about everything.
He was Batman, and he beat the shit out of people, and then he had feelings about it.
Yeah. And there was that Nirvana song on it. Emo bats for the win.
Alrighty. Well, I guess we can start where we normally start, and I am very interested to have your opinion about this, because I think this is kind of a unique one. So we'll start with our first segment, which is, did John like the soundtrack?
Well, the short answer is yes. And this is a story I loved from Rachel, because I listened to her, a talk from her as a podcast from one of the film festivals that's played at. And when she was describing what she wanted in the music, she was trying actively to create this sense of tension. And when she got done explaining everything to the composer, Ariel Marx, who is kind of a newer composer, and she's done a lot, but it's only been in like in the last no more than 10 years. Ariel basically heard what she said and was like, basically, you want a horror movie score. And the music that she created just sealed. It's like the final touch that kind of makes this film what it is. So I don't normally, it's got to be an outstanding score, or a score that, like the score to Psycho or Taxi Driver, that really makes the film what it is, for me to comment on that. And I absolutely love this. In fact, I kind of listened to it at work today on its own.
Yeah, it has I noticed it more than I generally do, because it like impacted the environment of this film a lot.
It has those, you know, plucky strings to it that it, you know, you think like psychological thriller and not necessarily like low-key dramatic comedy set in the Bronx. She has several scores out. This is the only one I had heard of, but she did do a score for something that had music also from Sharon Van Etten and Rufus Wainwright. Which means nothing to y'all, but a lot to me. So I'm going to have to check that one out as well. Now it's Joseph's turn.
Okay, so I guess we'll move into our next segment. Joseph, do you have the Rotten Tomatoes scores?
Yes, I do. Both of y'all guess. Do you know what, John, or are you actually oblivious to this?
I remained intentionally oblivious since we don't have a Roger Ebert or Gene Siskel review. I'm sure someone wrote one for RogerEbert.com, but since it's not Roger, I didn't give a shit. And not to give away my answer to another question later, I didn't look up Armand White just in case.
Yes, thank God for that. Well, all right. Could y'all guess what the Rotten Tomatoes score is?
I'm going to go with like an 89.
Okay.
I had like three numbers dancing in my head, and that was the lower of them. So,
all right, Sammy.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with like a 87.
Okay, well, John is barely closer. It's at a 96%.
Oh wow!
Wow.
Yeah, it's
that was higher than I thought of.
And out of like over 160 reviews. Nice. The consensus, a really ruefully funny calling card for debuting director Emma, how do you say her name?
Seligman.
Seligman. Okay, I did not want to say it wrong. Shiva Baby transcends its sitcom setup with strong performances and satisfying insights. And I have to agree.
God, it really is like a sitcom episode, isn't it?
It kind of is.
Yeah.
But just done with a very different twist.
Okay, so this is a smaller movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to go with a lot of people that didn't see this movie. But the ones that did probably really like it. So I'm going to go with a 95.
Okay. Well, it does have nearly nearly 400 reviews on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with like a 97.
Whew. Y'all, this one is actually one of the few that's lower than the critic score. It's at a 77%.
Okay. I guess just enough people saw it and were, you know, I can easily see a lot of people noping out for right reasons and a lot of people noping out for wrong reasons. So
it's like, okay. People can just be wrong. I mean, that's fine. Yeah. In the rights.
I did see a couple of reviews that were just like, what was this all about? This was stupid. I'm like,
So a couple of trolls gave the typical art house movie review. Cool. Yeah.
It was just not like it's fine if you don't like the movie. You can just say you don't like it and there's good reasons. Mm-hmm. But when you start saying this was dumb, there was no reason for it, I'm like, then you just don't know what you're talking about and you need to stop.
Yeah. It's like, madam, do you know what dumb is? I have a movie about a T-Rex that I can show you. That's dumb.
It's a dumb movie and I like
that. That is D capital U M no B dumb.
Well, there are some movies out there where that are especially not great movies. Like, this is the worst movie I've ever seen. It's like, then you need to watch more movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think even like some critics that you and I watch from time to time, like Stuckman, Chris Stuckman, will even say, if you say something like Twilight or Fast and the Furious 9 or Batman Returns, like, if that's the worst movie you saw, you have not even scratched the surface.
You have had it good.
Yeah.
Twilight, any of the Twilight movies, but those are nowhere near the worst movies.
Yeah. Let me tell you a little bit about a shot on shittio movie called Things. Ooh.
Let me tell you about a little movie called Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Oh, yeah, that's bad.
Sammy, whenever I tell you that Mortal Kombat Annihilation is an Oscar winner compared to Things, that tells you all you need to know about the movie Things.
I just, like, I have trouble imagining a worse film.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's way worse than Mortal Kombat Annihilation.
Baby Geniuses 2 exists, Manos the Hands of Fate, Police Academy 7.
Why'd you have to remind me?
I guess there's a movie I hated where, like, I really hated Open Water.
Yeah, that hating and worst movie are, like, two different things.
Yeah.
Like, Open Water is accepted by a good many of people. Whenever the majority of people either reject your movie or do it as an ironic watch, that's when you know you fucked up.
You know what? Somehow, I think Tommy Wiseau has recovered.
Tommy Wiseau is going to be fine. Also, I was going to say, you know, they don't, you know, whenever your movie gets two, albeit direct-to-video sequels, but they still got two sequels, you didn't fuck up as bad as you thought. And then I remembered there are four Norm of the North movies, and that just does not, I can't understand that. I saw that movie. Movie on opening day, and there were only five other people in the theater, three of which were children. No one, not even, gave a courtesy chuckle.
Oh, and I've
for
also
90
seen,
minutes.
I watched Blood Rain in theaters. That was bad.
Joseph, I'm going to once again tell you that the movie Things makes Blood Rain, a movie I have not seen, look competent and well made. That should tell you all you need to know.
Yeah, because that's pretty bad.
Don't make me keep referencing it, because we're going to end up doing it.
Well, and that's the episode Sammy's like, I'm done.
That's the episode where John says, I'm done.
Yeah, we haven't made it to Caligula yet, so that's where Sammy taps out.
Again, the movie Caligula was competently made, and that movie is incoherent as fuck. Because it was edited by someone who's not an editor. Anyway, so want to move along before we just keep having John reference movies that are worse or better than compared to the movie Things.
No, I think
also the movie Things was fun. The movie Things was fun to watch with the Joe Bob audience, but I cannot imagine watching that on my own without someone to tweet help to.
Apparently, Roger Ebert did not have an opinion on this, so.
No, well, Roger wasn't around, so I feel like Roger was. Yeah.
So I guess we're moving on to best line, worst line.
Oh, no, you skipped the Bechdel test.
Oh, right. Well, I think this one's pretty easy.
I didn't even Google it. It's like half the characters in this movie are most of the movies in this movie are women. They all have names, and they all are generally talking about Danielle, who's not a man. So.
Oh, right. And also, you know, two of the girls used to be in a relationship, so they are most definitely not talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I didn't even bother to Google. I'm just like, yeah, there's no way this doesn't pass. All right. So now we can do best line, worst line.
Yes. Okay. So do y'all have a best line, worst line?
I have one. One of my favorite lines. You look like Gwyneth Paltrow on food stamps and not in the good way.
One I thought was really funny. Gave me a really good chuckle. She's talking to somebody with her mom. She's like, listen to your mother and don't marry the one until you slept with at least 10 people.
Because you're going to end up with one and you'll be wiping his arthritic ass for the rest of your life. Yeah. Sammy, you got anything?
Y'all took mine, so no.
Oh, I have another. It says, the father is searching for his phone. Deb, do you have my phone on you? And she goes, no, you have Alzheimer's.
Yeah. He's either not listening or he's got Alzheimer's.
No, you know, I will say this though. I do have like a favorite moment. It's, well, a couple. It's a little depressing, but I liked the moment she had with her mom where she asked if her mom was disappointed in her. I just thought that was a really good, authentic moment. And then the other thing is after the incident with the holding of the baby, and she broke something else. She has that like breakdown in front of everybody with her mom there. And I just thought that was really, really well done.
Yeah, that's honestly, I think about the moment where the breakdown is really beginning is maybe my favorite part of the movie. And you had to get through a lot of things to get to that point. I don't have any worse lines. Because this movie doesn't have necessarily a lot of standout dialogue. And I feel that's on purpose because it's more about being in a moment.
I agree.
Versus,
it's really more about what's going on in the story more than what's going on with the dialogue.
Yeah. The dialogue is just shit. You could hear it at any Shiva almost any time.
Well, not just that. I think just like anytime you're at a family gathering, that's, that's just the shit you'll hear. You'll hear people being assholes to everybody, talking about behind their backs, so all kinds of stuff. And then, because I don't really have a worse line either, because nothing really stuck out to me as being awful or anything like that.
Yeah, and I think, Sammy, because we took two probably most quotable lines, I think Sammy hit on a point that this movie isn't about dialogue. This is a movie about moments. There are a lot of just the moments stands out more than what's being said in the moment, except for maybe the "Are you disappointed in me?" line.
Right. That's kind of how I felt.
I thought that moment was really good.
Mm-hmm. And that's that's really the moment that the tension, the bubble bursts, because by that point it's getting the car, and then Maya and Danielle having their moment, and then the chaos of her dad trying to drive all these people in a van full of shit home.
That are all very uncomfortable with each other, and dad is just completely oblivious to that, which I think is kind of like the icing on the cake, except for
Maya. Well, Maya and Danielle are, you know, that's when they hold hands and kind of smile at each other.
Right.
They have a sweet moment in the middle of absolute chaos. which I believe was the alternate title for this movie, Absolute Chaos.
Right. Okay. So I think we are. Sorry. I think from that yawn, it's time for our final segment, The Good, Bad, and the Ugly. So, I mean, I think we've covered, obviously, a lot of the good, but is there anything that we haven't covered?
Yeah, I've got one, and it's also part of the reason why I picked this movie for this week and this month, and that's this movie has got, in addition to all the, on top of all the praise that this movie was getting from critics, one thing this movie was really getting praised for was the fact that it's not the crux of the movie, but it's focused on black sexuality and the fact that it had a character call out in a not necessarily mainstream movie, but a movie that got some mainstream attention that bisexuality is not just a phase. It's, you know, and that a character called their mother out on that. And this movie got a lot of praise for that. And that's one of the early moments in this movie I really like when, you know, before shit starts hitting the fan.
Yeah, because it's whenever her mother sets her aside, I told you no funny business with Maya. You're lucky I am. I'm so open minded, but I thought you were done with this phase and everything. She's like, being bi is not a phase.
Yeah.
Yeah, like that. Because that's one mm-hmm. of the few things the mother will say that you're just like, you need to get out of that old way of thinking and just actually understand who your daughter is.
Right. Yeah. And she did it even after that. Even after she mentioned that, she went mm-hmm. on. When somebody else asked a question about it, she knocked it off as, well, she's done some experimenting, and whenever they referenced her being with someone, she was always trying to set her up with a man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because she has that old way of thinking, like, well, you're going to find a nice man that you're going to settle down with, and like, well, maybe she won't find a man. Yeah. Maybe she'll be with a girl, because who's obviously Maya that she still has a thing for.
Yeah. Now if we could just erase the biphobia in the queer community, that would be fantastic.
Small steps, John. Small steps.
The fact that there's any phobias within the LGBT community still boggles my mind. It's like, y'all know these are part of the letters, right? You know,
it is. But that's true of everybody. And you'll find in a group that they have a phobia of something. It's like, you should understand more than anybody that you shouldn't this way towards other people. But they don't see it that way.
Well, and in the early days of, like, you know, the gay rights movement, gay men and lesbians did not get along for the longest time until, like, something came along. It was really the AIDS crisis that brought them together. It's just like, oh, shit, our people are dying. We need each other. Does anybody have any bad and ugly in this movie?
No. I mean, all I have was my good, and I kind of touched on it a little bit, but I really, really loved the way that this movie was filmed. It had this realism to it that I thought was super interesting. These were conversations you felt like you were eavesdropping on, which I don't know. I just loved the way it was filmed. In particular, all the scenes, like, it was so tense, all the scenes at the Shiva, and it would go through moments. It was almost like you were suffocating, you were holding your breath, and then all of a sudden you could breathe for a second, and then it would go back to holding your breath. And it very much was like, I would be curious to know if the director had social anxiety, because that's what it feels like, almost like you're there, but you're not really there, and you are barely hearing what people are saying, but it's because your mind is somewhere else completely.
Yeah. I guess there breaks in tension, but they kind of fall under not bad or ugly, but just kind of weird. Maybe we need a separate category. It's called, well, that was a decision of her sending a topless pic and then almost giving him a blowjob in the bathroom of a Shiva. It's just like, but also to keep the horror movie theme going, that those were the sex scenes moments.
Well, and I think I understood what the moments were, because through this whole movie, she has no idea what she wants, what she's doing.
That's what it added to it. Because she always second guesses everything she does and doesn't exactly know what she wants to do.
Yeah.
I think that was the whole purpose for the...
Go ahead.
Oh, it's like I only have one bad thing, and it's not really anything against the movie. It's just the moments where it showed people like she's having her like just kind of panicking, and going in slow motion. Everybody shoving food in their face. I hated that moment. I just didn't
like that. And see, I like that. I get that because that's a trope. But
I get it. It's just one of those. That's just a personal thing.
Yeah. I think before we ask the big question, I got another question. What do y'all think happens next?
Go ahead, Sammy. I'll do mine after you do yours.
Whoa, wait, hold on. Repeat the question.
What do y'all think happens next? And not necessarily immediately, just like, you know, because I have a fanficky answer to that question.
I think him and his wife get divorced.
Yeah.
And not immediately, but I do think they get divorced. Mm-hmm. And I think that I think that they remain friends, but I'm not entirely sure they get back together.
I agree with you about the divorce. I think they get back together for a while. They move in together. Maya encourages her to go to grad school. She does that. And they have a amicable split. And Rachel finds someone in Danielle finds someone in grad school.
I kind of agree with you on that. Do you think her and her mother ever get to see eye to eye?
No, it's a mother and a daughter.
Oh, okay. Do you think she ever becomes more accepting of who she is?
I think so, but I also think she leaves the sugar baby life behind after this.
Oh, I agree with that, but yeah. You know, that was the one thing I was wondering if her mom, because her mom is one of those that just likes to be overbearing, and I think it will be overbearing because it's her mother. Yeah. But I was wondering if you thought she was ever going to accept her that she was actually bisexual and not just going through a phase.
I think she will, but also the overbearing mother is a standard piece of Jewish comedy. So
I think she'll still be overbearing as more of like, is she treating you right? Are you doing things right that like she likes? Are you doing this for her?
Yeah. Like when she gets her next girlfriend, the mom's going to be so critical of every decision she makes because she likes this one better than the other one.
That and her dad's be like, wait a minute, you're bi?
yeah, that's...
When did this happen?
Actually, her dad will still be looking for his fucking cell phone.
But so, I have a feeling he'll just be completely oblivious until it actually comes right to his face.
Yeah. He'll just be like, y'all need a ride? Get the van? No. So I think I know where this is going, but it's time to ask the big question. Joseph, Sammy, did y'all survive? Shiva, baby. I'm going to go with Sammy on this one first.
Shockingly, because I was not in the mood to watch this at all, and for the first, like, few minutes of it, I wasn't paying attention, but I very quickly started paying attention, and it's almost impossible to ignore. It's so intense, and I just thought I couldn't deny, like, how extremely well done it was, so... Yeah, I absolutely survived. It's one I would kind of have to be in the mood to watch, but I would definitely watch again and would never complain about watching because it, I don't know, like I said, I think it was just so, so well executed. And I guess actually really quickly, I should compare it to, okay, so did y'all ever see Spanglish?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. It's been a while. That I hated Spanglish. Like, I hated it. When I was done with that movie, I was like, what was the point? This was a waste of a couple hours. To me, it was kind of realistic, but I hated the ending because the ending to me felt like nothing was resolved. Like, I didn't like the open-ended way that the film left me feeling. It just didn't make sense to me. I left this movie feeling entirely different. Like, that ending almost made perfect sense.
All right. I haven't seen Spanglish in so long. I remember really liking it, but I think it was because it's like, oh, Adam Sandler stopped being stupid for 2 hours. This would be great. Joseph, what'd you think?
Yeah, I really survived this movie. I was interested whenever I found was looking into it before I watched it. I was like, oh, this seems like it'd be interesting. I'm kind of curious how it's going to go. And I was like, wait, it's only an hour and 17 minutes? But yeah. It fit the movie. It's really well done. Like, it's one of those, I don't think I'd have to be in a certain mood to watch it. I thought it's just the acting is what gets me going, and just the characters' relationships is really well done. And it's, I bet you if I went back and watched it more than once, I would pick up on things I didn't see before. But this is a really good directorial debut, and I'm curious what this director does next.
It's called Bottoms, and it comes out in 2023.
Yeah, but like I said, she has my interest. I'm really curious what it does.
Oh, definitely. So I will answer that question by pulling up my best films list of 2021. Do y'all think it made my top films of the year last year?
Yes.
What number do you think it landed?
Eight.
I don't know the exact number, but somewhere in your top 10.
It was number 9.
Oh, wow. I was close.
Yay. It was sandwiched in between Malignant and One Night in Miami.
Well, see, I haven't seen One Night in Miami yet.
Oh, it's really good.
Oh, yeah. That was during the early years of the show.
We should do Malignant, too. That would be interesting.
We did Malignant. We did Malignant. It was me and you.
Did we do Malignant?
Yes, we did.
Well, I don't remember.
Fuck you too.
I have a bad memory.
Clearly, he's got Alzheimer's. But to answer the question, yeah, I survived this film. I would say I could watch it easily anytime until this week when I was like, when it got to like Sunday night, and I was just like, oh fuck, I gotta watch this movie. But it was also like, I kind of remember the anxiety this movie kind of gave me. I was just like, am I ready to do this to myself again? This from someone that has willingly watched Sallow somewhere between more than one time.
Yeah.
Willingly.
I actually own Sallow.
Yeah. It's a good family film. Christmas time watch.
Every year.
So, yeah. Well, this movie was called a comedy, and I can kind of see it. But next week, we have an actual legit comedy because we're finally going to do Lesbian Week. And this week, we are talking about But I'm a Cheerleader. I know we teased it last time, but shit happens. But Mark is going to be back, and he's going to be talking But I'm a Cheerleader with us. Sammy, have you ever seen RuPaul without her drag makeup on?
No.
You're about to. And also, it's got y'all's an actress from y'all's favorite movie, Polyester, in it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, But I'm a Cheerleader has that John Waters kitsch to it without being John Waters.
Well, see, and it's been a while since I've seen this movie, so I'm curious how much it's held up over the years.
It has been a while since I've seen it too, and I've had the Blu-ray. It's sitting on my shelf, just staring at me like, you ever gonna fucking watch me? And I guess the answer is yes. This week I'm going to.
Let me know if it holds up so I know whether or not I'm sick. Oh.
You're doing the episode.
But I might be contagious.
We don't do these episodes in person.
Unless the movie's really bad.
I've heard COVID is transmittable through 5G.
Oh, you're safe. I only got 4G. That's good.
Is this because I compared this to a John Waters movie? You're going to like this one, I assume.
Okay.
Yeah. You almost said I guarantee it.
I did, and then I was just like, sometimes she's a wild card, sometimes it's a gamble. Like, I was waiting for this episode just because I'm like, Sammy's going to fucking hate this movie.
Did you really think I was going to hate this movie?
I had a mild worry in the back of my head. It's like, I can see you're hating it.
I was just curious because I was like, I'm curious what Sammy has, because you are a wild card. There are some things I'm like, Sammy's going to love this movie. She's like, I fucking hated it.
She's a wildcat.
And there are times like she's gonna hate this movie. She goes, "No, I love it." I was like, "I have no idea."
Yeah. I haven't hated that many movies, but yeah. I honestly didn't know how I was gonna feel about this movie either. When it first started, I didn't have high hopes, but yeah. I don't know, there was something about it.
Yeah, I feel like I'm more the wild card because I'm the one that recommended 2 out of 3 to all the boys I loved before movies, and feel in retrospect I owe the first one an apology. So I believe I recommended The Choice. Choice Redux coming soon. Also, to continue our ripping off of the rewatchables, would you watch a Shiva Baby TV series?
Yeah, I guess, but that'd be a long time to be in a Shiva.
Well, Shivas do go for 7 days, so
they can stretch one Shiva out. I mean, one day of the Shiva out for one season.
Didn't they try to do that with a wedding and that shit got canceled real quick?
Was it the worst week or something like that?
Something like that.
It wasn't bad. It just wasn't great.
It was a thing that happened.
The premise did get old after a while.
It's like, let's do a show. Let's do a sitcom in real time. How about no, Scott? So does anybody have anything they want to shout out?
Star Trek Strange New Worlds is going on, which is really good. Yeah. Orville Season 3 just came on, and it's really good so far. Obi-Wan Kenobi's out, and it's good.
And didn't Miss Marvel start today?
Yeah, I just watched
the time it of the recording.
I just watched it before we did this episode, and I really like it.
Awesome.
And The Boys, I haven't got to watch the new season of The Boys yet.
Be sure to crack open a cold one with The Boys.
Oh, me neither.
Sammy, you got anything?
Yeah, I guess. The new season of All American came out, and I have been binging nothing but that, and it's been awesome.
Is that Tom Brady related?
No, it is not. It is football related, though, but it's based on a true story.
I don't think we've ever done this, but can I give the opposite of a shout out?
Sure.
more of a just don't.
A public service announcement.
Yeah, public service announcement. It's like, I don't want someone wasting 6 hours of their life. I took the hit for 2 hours of it. But FX just did a miniseries called Pistol, which is based on the autobiography of Steve Jones, who is the guitar player for the Sex Pistols. Joseph, you've seen Metallica's Some Kind of Monster, right?
Oh, yeah. It's the movie where they just fight and Kurt's like, can we stop fighting, guys?
All right. You remember that dumb phrase Lars kept throwing around about how something was just stock?
Yeah.
That's Pistol. It's just stock. It's, the one thing I can say about the show is it did make me want to read Steve Jones's book, but as a biopic, sort of, it's just like, if this is the first rock biopic you've ever seen, I can see this working for you, but it is just all the dumb cliches. The guy that plays Sid Vicious is way too pretty to be Sid Vicious. Just eye-rolling moments. I like the fact that they made Chrissy Hynde of the Pretenders more of a character than she was in real life. But at the same time, it's just like, it never held my attention. Even though it had a really great soundtrack, obviously, because in addition to, like, the music of the Pistols, you know, the first episode had, like, Bowie and The Who and just a shitload of great music. Like it's not like incompetently made. It's just like, kind of like, what's the point? We've already seen Sid and Nancy, and we've already seen The Filth and the Fury. What are you going to do that's different from that? Other than focus on Steve Jones.
It's just a bland paint by numbers show that really wears out its welcome really fast.
Yeah. From what that being said, it's just bland, but I will give a shout out to Thomas Brody Sangster, who was the little kid in Love Actually, and he was 3-Eyed Raven associated in Game of Thrones. I don't remember which character, but he does great as Malcolm McLaren, who is a person that if I was to meet this to this day, I'd still want to punch him in the face. But John Lydon and Johnny Rotten, the lead singer for the Pistols. As annoying as I find that man now, especially since he came out as a Trumper, I kind of agree with him. I kind of see where he's coming from. Like, this movie is absolute bullshit, but even though I did watch it in absolute spite of him. So.
Since my first episode on the show was A League of Their Own, did y'all see that they have a TV series coming out?
I did. I knew about it, and I thought the trailer was good. And because I know that that league went on for several years, so this is a good way for them to focus on other years and other players.
I'm kind of curious about it because it's one of those. Of course, we're going to have a little bit of a bias because I do love the movie.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping this is good and not just a shameless cash grab off of a title.
I agree, although all the comment sections make me want to watch it more because all the whiny people.
Oh, well, yeah, anytime there are people that whine about everything now, and you're just like, oh, shut up. You have a good holidays.
Yeah. Also, breaking news, Joseph.
What's that?
As we've been recording, the trailer for the cinematic event of the year has dropped.
Oh, the Munsters?
The Munsters.
Have you seen? I haven't watched it yet.
I haven't watched it either, but my friend Kobe sent me the trailer, and I'm just like, I don't want to know if I want to watch this yet. Like, I know I'm going to end up watching the movie because I tend to take the hits on Rob Zombie for the group or the world, but I'm not ready to subject myself to the community theater players present the Munsters.
And see, I'll give it a shot because I like Rob Zombie. Are all of his movies good? No. But I do respect the man for what he's able to do.
Yeah. I'm going to take a shot at Crash Thompson today. He did a video for the 10 worst songs of 2006, and he had the audacity to put Foxy Foxy at number 8. Sir, no.
I like that song.
Yeah, apparently you and I are the only two that absolutely loved Educated Horses.
Really? I thought that was really good because he was doing something different.
Yeah. It's like, go listen to Hellbilly Deluxe 2. Therein you'll find the problem.
I think he gets a little too much hate sometimes.
Yeah. Like, I am gonna watch the movie, but I am glad that he is aiming for PG because I didn't want to see the foul-mouthed, unshowered, redneck version of the...
I think he knew better.
Yeah. It's like... Well, and he loves the Munsters too much to feel to really fuck with it too much. That being said, I know Halloween exists. Well, listeners, thank you for putting up with us one more week. And Joseph and Sammy, thank you for doing this with me again. And until then, I'm going to go eat something. I don't want to waste away.
Surviving Chick Flicks is brought to you by the Circle of Jug. The show is edited by John, and all clips used are the property of their copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, and leave us a 5-star rating at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get the show. If there's anything you would like us to cover on the show, or just drop us a line at survivingchickflicks@gmail.com. The show is copyright 2022, Circle of Jug Productions, all rights reserved.
Who died?
Abby. Uncle Morty's second wife's sister. You remember her?
No, I don't think so.
She used to play bridge with Bubby.
Really?